Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Big thanks to eBay for sponsoring this episode of Pass Gas. Passion, drive, patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. We're talking superchargers, turbos, exhaust kits, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need for the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
Millions of people flooded the streets of Mexico. They were eager to watch shiny race cars inaugurate their country's monumental new highway, a feat of engineering unmatched anywhere else in the world. They expected a thrilling cross-country race. They got a bloodbath instead. Some call it the most dangerous sports event in Mexican history, and with a mortality rate of 5 people killed every year, it certainly proved deadly to participants and spectators alike. Today on Pass Gas, we're taking a trip to the Sierra Madres and looking back on the original Carrera Panamericana, also known to friends, acquaintances, and loved ones as Carrera de la Muerta, the race of death.
Pass Gas Podcast. It's about cars, it's not about ports.
Carrera de la Muerta.
De la Muerta.
De la Muerta.
That's fun to say.
Carrera.
Carrera de la Muerta. It's like a burlesque dancer's name.
Yeah. Tia Carrera de la Muerte. I had such a crush on Tia Carrera when I was a little kid.
That's gross. That's funny.
Well, which one is it?
Carrera de la Muerta sounds like she hangs out with Blaine Capatch. That's an inside LA comedy joke.
I always misread that guy's name as Blaine Capcha.
That means you're a robot, Joe.
Yeah. Oh, fuck, that's true. Is this how I find out?
Welcome back to Pass Gas, everybody. Very interesting story today. Very excited to tell it. My name is Nolan Sykes. I'm joined by my co-hosts. We got Joe Weber.
Keep it juiced.
And James Pumphrey.
If you think that's hot, it's only going to get hotter.
What if your producer tag was just, who's responsible for this?
I'm not paying for this.
Yeah. They hire like the principal from Breakfast Club on Cameo to record like their producer tag.
Who's responsible for this?
How you guys doing?
I got a bit of a late start today.
Yeah,
I was literally just hanging out and you called me and you were like, hey, you gonna join the podcast? I was a half hour late.
We were getting a little worried.
I was hanging out.
Like it's kind of expected that one of us is gonna be maybe like 5 minutes late. That's kind of like the window. Uh-huh. And then I think Joe or Thomas, producer Thomas, like hit you up on Slack. We didn't get any response for like 10 more minutes.
It was honestly kind of scary.
Yeah. You weren't online on Slack. And then we're like, oh man, it's getting a little late. Who knows?
I've been watching TikToks on my couch, just straight hanging out.
How's your algo?
It's better. Last night it got kind of weird.
Things were weird, man.
Things are a little weird. Got a little inside last night.
I watched this guy on TikTok that makes like people suggest crazy cocktails for him to make. Uh-huh. And he likes all of them. One was like soy sauce, black pepper, and vodka, and pineapple juice.
That's like a steak.
It's like teriyaki sauce.
Yeah, it's like teriyaki.
Yeah. Which I think I would like.
I do like a good savory cocktail.
There's not enough of them.
Yeah. Those are good.
What are you talking about? Like gravy? Gravy with whiskey in it?
No, but you know, you get something like a mezcal cocktail. They're not necessarily super sweet. It's more of like just like a smoky kind of. Yeah, those are interesting. I also think like some like gin cocktails are also not exactly sweet. They're more like herbal, you know. Yeah, I dig those.
Do you know you know like how the old fashioned cocktails have whipped egg whites on top?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I went to a bar that did vegan versions of that, and they used garbanzo bean goo. And I was like, that's, I wish I didn't see the can there. Cause then I was like, bean goo is so gross.
But it's like a protein kind of,
starchy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds like a derogatory term an Italian would call you.
A bean goo.
Hey, you bean goo.
Gulufuduzu. That means ass face.
I keep remembering every day this week when I wake up that I have jury duty on Monday.
Oh no.
Yeah. That was like the delayed jury duty. Like I got the letter like 2 months ago and I, you know, delayed because it was during a shoot week. And now I have it again on a shoot week.
Oh, what if you get put on a 2-year murder trial?
No, that would not be good.
Looks like I have to come over there and make you unfit to serve.
Yeah. How do I do that?
Just go up to him, go up to the person and be like, listen, I'm not a good guy.
Be really vague about it though, because you don't want to say I'm racist.
I just don't think I should be on a jury because I'm not a good guy.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
I think everyone's innocent.
It is weird though, because I made it to the last round where there was like 30 people left.
Congratulations.
And it was like a woman suing her company. And I didn't want to do it. I'd been there for 3 days already, like with this selection process. And they got to me and they were like, is there any reason that you are unfit to be on the jury? And someone sued my cousin's restaurant a while ago and I just pulled it out of my ass. And I was like, yeah, I told this story and they, excuse me, it worked.
Wow. Okay. I'll have to, with the context of the trial, I'll have to find something in my back pocket.
Yeah.
Next week is going to be super busy because we got to shoot and we have to go on location to a racetrack for that. And then I'm going to Iowa at the end of the week. Also, one of my buddies is coming over because we're going to go see Deftones. So a lot of stuff going on and jury duty. My civic duty is not, I just don't have space for it.
Don't go. Yeah.
The origins of the Carrera Panamericana actually go all the way back to before cars even existed. In 1884, the United States passed a plan to build a railway system connecting North and South America. But the idea got slowed down enough by international politics that construction still hadn't begun by the early 20th century, when the use of cars started rapidly overtaking railroads. Alongside this technological transformation, the idea of an intercontinental railroad eventually transformed into an intercontinental highway. And in 1937, 14 countries agreed to a deal spearheaded by the United States to reconstruct the Pan American Highway, a network of roads spanning 19,000 miles between Alaska and Argentina.
Well, 19,000, that's a lot.
That's a lot of roads. In 1950, Mexico became the first country to complete its portion of the highway, 2,178 miles of roadway running north-south between Texas and Guatemala. In order to promote their accomplishment, the Mexican government decided to throw a 9-stage, 5-day, border-to-border rally race. They called it the Carrera Panamericana, or Pan American Race, for us gringos. Mexico hoped that publicity generated by the race would help spread the word of the country's increasing modernity. This was during an era of economic growth known as the Mexican Miracle. And the Mexican government imagined that images of state-of-the-art race cars on their newly inaugurated highway would replace colonial Mexico in the minds of the world's uppity-ups. I was doing some research last night after I read through this. And, dude, Mexican history
better man than me.
Mexican history is super interesting. And this is a really strange time. Or not strange, but this time that we're in, this time period, the late 40s to the 50s, it's a really interesting time for Mexico. Very like most of Mexico's history up to this point was, they won their independence from Spain. And then the people decided that their new government was a little too close to the Spanish government, because they still, the caste system that Spain had brought over was still intact. So then they had a revolution in the early 1900s. So in like the three decades preceding this race,
they were still answering to the Spanish king.
That was, the revolution came after independence. So those are two separate events. The revolution in the 1900s was against an independent government. They just thought that the revolt was all around, like, this government, even though we are independent from Spain, it's too similar to Spain, the system that Spain had set up. You know, rich people own all the land. We're, peasants are working the land. We don't like this. So they got rid of it. So that's kind of the context of this, is like, now in the 40s into the 50s, the Mexican government that was in place after the revolution, now they want to appear to be more friendly to international business. And this race is kind of like a showcase of Mexico's infrastructure to attract more people to do business here. It's a shift away from the old, like in the decades after the revolution, the government would still take land from rich landowners and give it over to peasants and stuff like that. But then they reversed that policy, I think in the late 40s. And now they're trying to be more business minded.
Well, thanks for that update. That puts everything into perspective.
That was like super base level. I'm not claiming to be an expert, but I definitely want to know more about Mexican history now, because it's fascinating.
You're going to come into work on Monday and Nolan's going to have the accent over the second, the A in his name, Nolan.
Nolan.
Anyway. The race path ran almost entirely along the new road for a total distance of 2,096 miles. It began in Ciudad Juarez, just across the border from El Paso, and finished 5 days and nine stages later in the jungles of Chiapas on the Guatemalan-Mexican border. Among the many challenges of the path were significant temperature and elevation changes. The drivers would travel from as low as 328 feet above sea level to as high as 10,482 feet, which required the teams to rejet their carburetors between stages to cope with the thinner air at higher altitude.
That's a huge elevation change.
The inaugural Carrera kicked off on May 5th, 1950, with 40,000 spectators lining the streets of Juarez to inaugurate the new highway. The starting lineup featured 132 drivers from all over the world, representing virtually every motorsport. Formula One, rally, stock cars, endurance racing, and even drag racers were there. Because the race started at the Texas border and entry was open to anyone, many of the entrants were American, including several IndyCar drivers and NASCAR founder Bill France. Many of the other drivers were unsponsored amateurs chasing the 150,000 peso prize, including an unusually high for the time, nine female drivers.
They were unusually high. The female drivers.
Oh, yes.
Specifically, just the female drivers.
Yeah, they all met up before and smoked a diff.
Smoked some mota.
The vehicles, meanwhile, were limited to stock sedans with five seats.
Huh.
In the end, American cars and drivers took the first four places. Herschel McGriff and Ray Elliott took the checkered flag in an Oldsmobile 88. Claiming a little over $17,000 as their winnings. Not bad. They raced the final miles on the gravel roads of Chiapas without oil.
What?
Due to bottoming out the oil pan earlier in the day.
What? How did that happen?
They just rode it, man.
They just rode it out. Nevertheless, they beat a competitor's Cadillac to the finish despite a smoking and rattling engine, which I imagine they just left there.
Yeah, I imagine that too. There's like, yeah, right, bye.
Yeah. Just park it near the pyramid.
McGriff's Oldsmobile averaged 88 miles per hour over the 5 days and was able to outpace more powerful competitors from Lincoln and Cadillac because of a substantial weight advantage. Much of the race course was in Mexico's enormous Sierra Madre mountain range, and the Oldsmobile could pull away from heavier cars on uphill stretches.
Because they didn't have all that oil weighing them down.
McGriff's lighter car was also much easier to stop, meaning that the Oldsmobile finished on its original brake pads while the bigger cars were forced to reshoe their brakes every night. That's crazy. This proved especially important since neither McGriff nor Elliot was capable of even basic maintenance to their car.
This reminds me...
I know the type.
My grandparents, or maybe my great-grandparents, took a trip down to Florida from Milwaukee and drove all the way there. And my great-grandma drove, and she drove with 2 feet. And she wore she wore a set of brake pads down to Florida, bought a new set, wore them out, driving back up to Milwaukee.
Just because she was like resting her foot on the brake pedal, just like wore it out. Wow. However, the race was overshadowed by tragedy right from the beginning. On the first leg of the race, Guatemalan driver Enrique Hockmeister flew off the road and flipped over 6 times, leaving him with a broken skull.
Oh, no.
He later died from his injuries, as people with broken skulls generally do.
But that's a sick-ass name, though, Enrique Hockmeister.
Yeah, it's interesting.
It sounds like a fake name that a frat guy would give his friend.
Yeah.
Enrique Hockmeister. His name's like Eric Hawk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. In another accident on the same stage, a 4-year-old boy was killed and 2 other spectators were injured when a Lincoln Cosmopolitan driven by Mexican natives Jesus Velezi and Adolfo Duenas Costa lost control and barreled into a crowd. Other racers drove off bridges, into trees, and off of cliffs. The accidents were quickly plastered across newspapers, spoiling the new highway's inauguration day. Ooh. Later on, Peruvian driver Jesus Reyes Molina died when he hit a bridge on the 4th stage, and spectators also killed after being struck by the Nash Ambassador driven by Eddie Salahub and Nicolao Scott. Despite the death toll, or maybe because of it, fans were wild about the race. When the Carrera reached Mexico City, estimates suggested that crowds between 500,000 and 1 million people lined the streets in a city of just 3 million residents. The event generated enough national pride that the government decided to stage it once again in 1951.
When does Porsche join it? Because they have to be in this, right? They have 2 cars named after this race?
Yeah, they do. The Carrera and Panamera are both named after this race.
Well, I was thinking about the Porsche Hockmeister.
But, Joe, you'll just have to wait, I think.
Okay.
So hang in there, buddy, okay?
Yeah, I really want a 911 Carrera S Hockmeister GTS.
With a Hockmeister axle?
So many badges on the back of this 911.
We'll be right back with more of this story, but first, a word from our sponsors.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
The second running of the Carrera Panamericana was rescheduled from May to November in hopes that fall weather would be better than the rainy, humid Mexican springs. It's a great soap. The route was also reversed to run from south to north so that media could take advantage of better infrastructure at the finish near the American border. This time, the race started in Chiapas and finished in Juarez. The new date.
Oh, they did it backwards.
Yeah, man, that's what I've been saying. They did it the opposite. Start in the south, get in the north. That way the reporters can do the finish line. The new date was also chosen for after the end of the American and European racing seasons. Organizers hoped this would help attract more professional teams. Ferrari was the first European manufacturer to enter a factory team, sending two blue and silver 212 Intervenales customized with five seats to meet race rules.
Interesting.
I want one. The Ferrari Works team ran under the Centro Deportivo Italiano banner, although more noticeable was Sinclair Oil's big green dinosaur logo painted on the side of the car as the team's main sponsor.
That's the best logo.
Hell yeah.
My favorite gas station logo. It just is awesome.
You just hear that that dinosaur going, use my bones to drive.
Do you remember that show, The Dinosaurs?
Yeah.
Their last name was Sinclair.
Oh. That's why. Okay. I thought the baby's name was Sinclair, but he's just Baby Sinclair.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, sweet. This thing's awesome.
Yeah.
Dude, put it in the chat.
I did.
Organizers were determined. I'm going to look at it next time I'm not reading.
Okay.
Cool. Not that I'm reading. All off the top. We just know this stuff. We're just having a conversation. Shh. We're just having a conversation about something that we're all passionate about.
Yeah.
Like, you know, 20 minutes ago, we like met on Zoom and we were like, what do you guys want to talk about today? And we were like, what about, I think Joe brought it up. He's like, what about the Carrera Panamericana?
What about that race that started in Tuxtla?
Organizers were determined to prevent another bloodbath with a massive safety effort intended to protect both drivers and spectators. Reports from 1951 indicate that 50,000 soldiers were deployed on the race route in order to assure maximum safety along the entire highway. The day before each stage, troops were sent to clear the countryside of stray farm animals for a mile in either direction. During the race, soldiers were instructed to keep spectators 150 feet away from either side of the highway.
Okay, so they're taking steps.
Not so fast.
Uh-oh.
It didn't work.
Ah!
Once again, several deaths marred the race and further enhanced its reputation for danger. Most visibly, Jose Estrada, a prosperous Mexico City car dealer and a veteran racer, announced before the race that, quote, I will win or die trying.
Why would you say that?
you know that people die doing this, right, dude?
Yeah. Guess what happened? Estrada and his co-driver Miguel Gonzalez were both killed on the opening stage when their 1951 Packard skidded off the road and tumbled 630 feet down into a ravine. God.
It's like a Simpsons bit. It's like, I'm going to win this or die trying. And then the car crosses the start line, veers left, and immediately goes off a cliff.
The fact that it happened in the first stage does make it very funny.
It's ironic for sure.
The 1951 Carrera also claimed the life of the mayor of Oaxaca, a major city in southern Mexico, when his car careened off the mountain roads during a pre-stage inspection.
What? Was he just forgot to put it in park? Well,
what I think it is, like, dude, okay, so like they all these, like he's a bigwig, you know, he's like, oh, we got a race coming through my city. Dude, let me check out the track real quick. And he's in his car just like blasting around turns or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And then just messes up.
Yeah. Like he's not like just sitting there. He's driving like an old rich dude.
Yeah.
Oh, that's like a pre-stage inspection is like you, it's like walking the track almost.
Yeah, but you're in a car probably.
Yeah. It's like car careened off the mountain. Yeah. So he was going fast.
Yeah.
He wasn't inspecting. He was.
Dude, can you imagine if the mayor just drove off a cliff?
I mean, in LA, I wouldn't be that sad.
Yeah, me neither. And Carlos Panini, a famous pioneer of Mexican aviation, was killed while jockeying a 15-year-old American Bobby Unser for position on the second stage.
Whoa.
Oh, Bobby Unser.
I think it was
he's
a
only
weird,
15 at this
weird choice of words to say jockeying with 15-year-old.
that weird choice of words my brain decided to do, because this is all off the top of my head. Totally unscripted. Pass Gas, number one unscripted automotive podcast. This is actually live. You're listening to the radio.
Yeah, there's no cuts at all.
Yeah. Panini had previously established Mexico's first airline and is also credited with being the first pilot to fly a light plane around the world.
And he makes great sandwiches.
He presses them. But his daughter, Teresa, was actually the registered race driver since Panini didn't have a valid driver's license. Nevertheless, Panini was at the wheel of their Alfa Romeo 6C 2500 despite ill health. Unser later described trying to overtake Panini, who was traveling at a lower speed and blocked Unser and his father, Jerry, for a long stretch. When Unser finally made his move, Panini tried to block him again, and the two cars bumped into each other. Unser recovered control of his Jaguar to narrowly avoid plunging off a sheer cliff, but Panini's Alfa Romeo went straight into a wall.
Oh, no.
As Unser described it, quote, "The car exploded on impact like an egg hitting a sidewalk. I didn't know it at the time, but Carlos was killed instantly. Luckily, daughter Teresa escaped unharmed." The deaths of Panini and Estrada in particular, a pair of well-known Mexican sportsmen, spurred horrified reactions from government officials and the press. One politician called the race an imitation of North American customs not suited to Mexican characteristics. Mexico City's El Universal newspaper declared the race was, quote, a crime.
Wow.
First and second place were won by the Ferrari 212 Inters. Bill Sterling, a salesman from El Paso, placed third in a Chrysler Saratoga. Future Indy 500 champion Troy Ruttman took fourth in a flathead V8 Mercury 8 he reportedly bought for $1,000 in a used car lot in El Monte, California. Yet, Ruttman and his beater bested several factory Lancias and Ferraris.
Those cars probably broke down and stuff. The Chrysler just kept on ticking.
But the results hardly seemed to matter. Even off track, the race was getting bad press. Four engineering students died and two others were injured on their way to watch the car pass.
Oh my God.
Come on, man.
El Informador, a newspaper in Guadalajara, claimed that they lost their lives due to excessive speed, which became a common theme in critiques of the Carrera Panamericana. It encouraged people to engage in reckless driving as they emulated racers.
I mean, just think about the way people leave the parking lot at like Formula Drift events and stuff.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, and then this is like a race that's going across the entire country. People are, it's like.
And it's also the 50s. People didn't have like the computer.
Right.
Like they'd never seen any of this. Like they'd never seen videos of this. They'd never seen, a lot of people probably never seen like magazines about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like the 50s were way different, man.
Wild.
Yeah. They didn't even have games on their phone.
No, no, that's probably the most tragic thing of all.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have Flappy Bird.
They couldn't even play Flappy Bird.
Yeah, man, in the 50s, there wasn't even Flappy Bird.
Organizers were unmoved.
They didn't have Crush Candy.
They didn't even crush candy on their phone.
They didn't even have crushing candies.
They didn't even have Smarties. Okay.
Back then, they thought ketchup was spicy.
Organizers were unmoved by the scalding press. The race was still popular with crowds and was still
scalding
getting the...
Scalding press, is that a Panini callback?
Oh, nice.
Oh, dude, that's so good.
The race was still popular with crowds and still getting the desired publicity for Mexico's burgeoning technical sector. So the race continued on in 1952... and following the same path as the original race in 1951.
Going Chiapas to Juarez.
That's what I thought. So the American press can more take advantage of the infrastructure at the top. And
so they can more take pictures of the racers. And
yes.
When they finish.
Ferrari's 1951 victory led to more manufacturer participation. Most notably, Mercedes-Benz sent a highly organized teams of drivers, mechanics, and 300 SLs, the Gullwing, baby, sent some of those over.
Dude, I didn't realize you got so hyped over Gullwings.
I love those things. Dude, Jay Leno has one that's like red, but it has
oh,
a bunch
it's all
of,
beat
it's
up.
Got like, It's all beat up. Paint's chipping off. It's got a little bit of surface rust here and there, but it's sick. That's my favorite one that he has.
Oh, you like a car that Jay Leno has that has patina?
No, man, what? It's legit cool.
That's weird.
It's like so cool.
It's not, yeah. Okay. I wouldn't call it patina. It's more of just like, there's like big chunks of paint that it was chipped
raced.
Off.
Because it was raced.
It's super sick.
Oh, nice.
It's really cool.
It's like a 100% period correct, like because it was actually raced at the time, unrestored.
Yeah, it's
Gullwing super race dope. Car. Did Jay say that was his so favorite cool. car?
Not that I remember. I remember thinking that was my favorite car of his collection that I saw.
Yeah, but it was up there for me too. It's like one of the coolest cars I've ever seen.
It's so dope. Ferrari and Lancia both returned as well, while F1's Gordini also entered the fray. I think that's a race car manufacturer. With more and more European sports cars competing, race organizers divided what had been a single class into sports car and stock car entries. So the heavy American sedans didn't have to compete directly with the European entries. This race saw the lowest fatality of any running, but also maybe its most famous accident. The only death was Mexican driver Santos Latona, who flipped his Jaguar XK120 on stage 3. But the 52 race is most famous for a collision involving driver Carl Kling and his navigator Hans Klenk, who won the whole thing.
Kling and Klenk.
Kling and Klenk. They are Kling and Klenk.
Yeah.
They won the whole thing despite a full-on vulture crashing through their windshield. During a long right-handed bend in the opening stage, the roar of Kling's Mercedes W194 scattered a group of birds by the roadside. One of them, a vulture with a 4-foot wingspan, crashed straight through the passenger side of the windshield and briefly knocked Klenk unconscious. When Klenk awoke, he urged Kling to maintain speed, despite the fact that he was bleeding profusely thanks to the shattered window. They managed to avoid stopping until the pre-scheduled tire change 40 miles later, where Klenk cleaned himself up. When interviewed after the race, Kling and Klenk agreed that the bird weighed as much as 5 fattened geese.
Americans will measure in any way but the metric system.
Less famously, but with far larger long-term implications, Kling and Klenk developed an innovative pace notes system for the race, which allowed Klenk to identify and communicate upcoming road bends in rapid shorthand to Kling. Their system was so effective that it's still used in rally today.
Car Kling.
Kling and Klenk.
Hey, what's up? We're the Car Brothers.
We're the Car Brothers. I'm Kling and he's Klenk.
We razzed each other.
He's bleeding.
I'm Kling and I'm Klenk, and this is what we do.
He's bleeding from the bird.
We'll get back to more Pass Gas, but right now, a word from our sponsors.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Big thanks to eBay for sponsoring this episode of Pass Gas. Passion, drive, patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. We're talking superchargers, turbos, exhaust kits, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need for the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
In anticipation of the fourth race, organizers named newly elected Mexican President Adolfo Ruiz Cortines the honorary president of the Carrera Panamericana in 1953.
Well, that guy's a double president?
Yeah, president squared. The Carrera's status was also enhanced when it was named the final round of the brand new World Sports Car Championship, a circuit run by the FIA of important sports car, endurance, and road racing events. The sports car class and stock car class were both split into two divisions depending on engine size. The over 1.6-liter sports car class was set up as a battle between Ferrari, Gordini, and Lancia. After taking two podium spots in its first Carrera, Mercedes bowed out before 1953 to focus on Formula One. But in imitation of Mercedes the previous year, Lincoln and Lancia both came to the race with highly organized teams and pre-prepared notes. Both teams swept 1, 2, 3 finishes in their respective categories. Lancia was helped along by legendary Argentine F1 racer and 5-time world champion Juan Manuel Fangio, who drove the winning vehicle.
Fangio.
Hold on, wait a minute. This is like, imagine if they did something like this today where you have manufacturers bringing like their top of the line race cars. And you have freaking like Lewis Hamilton also taking part in this, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, cool.
I was watching Extreme E and I think Carlos Sainz Jr. was riding one of the cars. So I guess it still kind of happens.
I think that was Carlos Sainz Sr.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that would make more sense if it's a rally race.
Yeah, because he's an off-road guy. He likes dirt.
I just think everyone's a junior.
Yeah.
Okay. Because you're such a daddy.
Yeah. Do people say Zaddy anymore? Or is that Chuggy?
I think Chuggy is Chuggy.
I think that's a great shirt. Do people say Zaddy anymore? Or is that too Chuggy?
That's pretty good.
Jose Herrarta of Guatemala won the smaller sports car class in a Porsche 550. The Germans had entered a factory team into the Carrera for the first time, but it failed to finish. However, the company ended up seeing the race as a success because their cars took the top two podium spots in the junior sports class. But sadly, 1953 went down as the bloodiest Carrera yet with 9 fatalities, 3 drivers and 6 spectators.
Oh my God.
The biggest tragedy occurred on the opening leg when American Bob Christie failed to make a left turn, which sent his Ford backwards over an embankment into a muddy river bank below. As Christie and his co-driver escaped the wreckage of their car, a crowd gathered to watch and aid the drivers. But in that moment, the brakes on Mickey Thompson's Ford 6 jammed and he came up on the same turn. He crashed over the same embankment as Christie and into the gathered crowd, killing 6 people who had moved to get a better view of the accident.
Jesus.
I remember this from the Mickey Thompson first part.
Yeah, it really messed him up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's when he like stopped racing.
Yeah. Can you imagine killing 6 people?
God.
Like, you're a pretty successful serial killer at that point.
That's insane, man.
Later that same day, Italians Antonio Stagnoli and Giuseppe Scotuzzi were fatally injured when their works Ferrari 340 blew a tire and crashed near Hucatan de Zaragoza. Sorry. Finally, race leader Felice Bonetto was killed on stage 4. Bonetto and his teammate Giovanni Bracco were running single-seat Lancias without co-drivers. That meant they couldn't use the pace note system like everyone else. So instead, they had driven ahead and painted warning signs along the route. But Benento missed a sign warning him of a dip in the road near the village of Soleo and crashed into an electrical pole. He was killed instantly.
That seems like way more work to be like, why don't you guys just have a co-driver that knows the route and can tell you? No, I think I'm going to drive the 2,000 miles and put warning signs up.
Well, it's a single-seat race car.
No, I know, but
they want to drive the ultimate car on the ultimate course.
Well, looks like they paid the ultimate price.
I'll say. But people were still nuts for this race. When it reached Mexico City, spectators were climbing on top of nearby cars and trains to see the racers pass. Soldiers had to be instructed to lower their bayonets to keep spectators off the race course. By this point, the Carrera was a lightning rod for criticism. Newspapers condemned the race for its melanchismo, a popular term of the time meant to condemn Mexican citizens who seemed to help foreigners at the expense of their countrymen.
Organizers were aware of growing objections, so prior to 1954's race, Alessio Robles, the director of public relations, announced that the Mexican government would provide the least amount of money possible for it to continue. I'm sure it's going to get so much safer because of that. Unfortunately, he couldn't say how much they had spent in the past because their records had disappeared. Oh well. The race went on, but the bad publicity was taking its toll. Several race organizers briefly resigned in a successful attempt to draw more government support. Despite retaining its place in the World Sports Car Championship, manufacturer participation was down compared to previous years. In 1954's Carrera Panamericana was marred by tragedy before any cars even made it to the starting line. First, en route to the start in Chiapas, a non-competing Jaguar XK120 service car overturned, killing two American mechanics. Then, two Argentine competitors, Juan Antonio Gatti and Alfredo Duara, were fatally injured on their way to the race when they crashed into a canyon south of Puebla. More bad news followed as the race got underway. On the opening stage, Jack McAfee's Ferrari 375 Plus blew a front tire and barreled off the road. McAfee survived multiple injuries, but his co-driver Ford Robinson was fatally injured. Another incident followed on stage 5 when Victorio Mengi lost control of his Chevy Bel Air and crashed outside the town of Durango, killing his co-driver Leopoldo Alvaro Zabato. A Mexican soldier and two unnamed spectators were also struck by vehicles over the course of the race, making for 7 total deaths in 1954.
Mexican authorities came under tremendous pressure to cancel the Carrera due to the costs and extreme safety hazards. While the first race in 1950 was an amateur affair, by 1954, it had become a highly professional endeavor. In addition to Juan Manuel Fangio, famous drivers like Carroll Shelby, Red Byron, and Phil Hill had competed in the race. Meanwhile, the automotive power in these cars grew exponentially alongside the more skilled drivers. Between 1950 and 1954, the winner's car's average speed had gone from 88 to 138.
Oh my God.
Even though the course barely changed at all. And it was not uncommon to see the lead cars top 180 miles per hour. Herschel McGriff won the 1950 race with a total combined time of 27 hours and 34 minutes. 4 years later, Umberto Maglioli did it in 17 hours and 40 minutes, nearly 10 hours faster than McGriff, and also more than an hour faster than the hyper-efficient Mercedes team had accomplished just 2 years earlier.
That's pretty crazy. I guess like the Cannonball Run is 3,000 miles, right? This is 2,000. But the record for that is 27 hours right now.
Yeah, but that's on a road.
Yeah.
They have stoplights.
I'm just trying to like formulate how different they are in my head. 138 miles per hour as an average speed is pretty cray-cray.
That's cooking, man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of off-road sections. And
stuff. As an average speed.
Yeah. And people are going 180 miles per hour in 1954, which there's is no absolutely terrifying.
Yeah, no seatbelts. However, the Mexican authorities didn't make any announcements until the 1955 Le Mans disaster made them realize the true danger of the Carrera Panamericana. It was the most catastrophic crash in motorsports history, killing French driver Pierre Levay and 83 spectators, plus injuring nearly 180 more. And in its wake, the Carrera organizers finally decided, let's quit while we've only killed 27. Yes, a startling 27 people died during the Panamericana's original five-year run. It was widely thought by contemporaries to be the most dangerous race in the world and owns the uncomfortable record of highest documented mortality rate per race in the history of motorsports. Only a third of entrants typically even finished the race, and the long stage sections were impossible to secure entirely, making it possible for crashes to linger for several hours before they were noticed. But the ultimate issue was the amazing technical transformation in automobiles after World War II. Engines got bigger, cars got faster, and safety was largely an afterthought. Unfortunately, in this case, competitors and spectators alike became the casualties.
The Carrera Panamericana's primary legacies are a bloody reputation, but it is also responsible for a couple other historical footnotes. For instance, Porsche named the 911 Carrera because of the car's success in this race. And in 2009, they also debuted the four-door Panamera, a name also inspired by Panamericana. Mercedes got in the name game when Mercedes-AMG named their new grille after this race. The Panamericana grille can be found on almost all AMG vehicles starting from 2018. The race was revived in 1988 with upgraded safety rules and an altered 7-day 2,000-mile route, but similar restrictions, only 5-seat sedans. And as a result, the bulk of entries were highly modified 1950s and 1960s American stock cars. Well, not stock cars as in stock cars, but you know, you get what I'm saying.
Stock American cars.
Stock American cars. But in 2006, the revived race debuted a modern category called Unlimited that now allows machines manufactured after 1990 to compete. Despite the extensive safety regulations now in place, many sections of the road are as dangerous as ever. This separates the Panamericana from other modern recreations of famous road races. It remains a true high-speed sprint through the mountains. It's less deadly now than it used to be, but at least 4 drivers have died in recent years.
Well, they shouldn't have added that corkscrew to the road.
Yeah, or the flip.
Yeah, the
what
flip.
What the heck?
It's a big spatula, and when you drive on it, it flips you up in there.
They also painted a bunch of tunnels on the side of rock.
And all the spectators are wearing ghillie suits.
But here's the thing. There's no real reason to do this race anymore. The 70-year-old highway doesn't need any more publicity. We know our cars can handle extreme mountain roads most of the time, and we know that the results are bad when they fail. But people still risk their lives to compete in the Carrera Panamericana every single year, just like they did in the 1950s. And that speaks to the reason we all want to own cool cars that go really fast. Because why the hell not?
Why the hell not indeed?
Well, I think that was amazing for coming off of the top of your heads, guys.
Yeah. I'm really impressed. That was fun.
What? We like to read. We like to know stuff. Sue us.
Speaking of reading, let's get to our mailbag this week.
This is a correction. I'm really excited about this.
Yes.
All right.
I've been waiting for someone to put us in our place.
Oh, correct us.
Do you want to read this, James? Or Joe? How about you read it, Joe?
Okay. Yeah, Joe. I'm usually the most wrong person on this thing, so
not today. Today it's Nolan.
Oh man.
Brent writes, "Hey guys, love the show and all Donut Media content. My son Icer introduced me to B2B and the D-List. We now watch and listen to everything."
Well, thanks, man.
On to the correction. I knew there was a catch. During this past week's episode, Nolan stated that Jeff Gordon was the only driver to ever be Rookie of the Year in both the Busch, now Xfinity, and the Cup Series. I happen to know that Eric Jones, driver of the famous number 43 for Richard Petty, won both of those honors. So up yours, Nolan. Brent didn't say that. In fact, he also won the Truck Series honor and think he is the only driver to ever win all three of them.
Well, shit, man.
Are we sure Nolan said only and not first?
I don't know, but I'm going to go walk into the ocean. Thank you,
no,
Brent.
Let's rewind the tape. Let's look at the tape before you
use
go
this as a learning ocean. Experience and move on from it.
Yep.
Thanks again for all the hard work you guys put into this podcast and for bringing car/motorcycle culture to a format for a younger generation. Keep up the great work.
Well, thank you, Brett of Flint, Michigan.
Brett Nicola, Flint, Michigan. In quotes, Vehicle City. Is that what really, is that what they call Flint? Vehicle City?
I don't know.
Because Motown was already taken?
Yeah. Well, big thank you,
Motor
Brent.
City. We built, we got the, all the, a whole vehicle.
Yeah.
Doesn't, not even cars. We got pedal cars. We got those bikes with the little curtain on top that you pedal while you're drinking beers.
You ever heard of a schooner? That's a vehicle.
It is a vehicle. If you would also like to correct us, hit us up at pastgas@donutmedia.com, or if you just want to send us mail about anything else, hit us up there.
Nolan has a huge correction kink, so.
I do.
Correction kink.
Hit us up. Follow the boys at Joe G. Weber, at James Pumphrey, and me at Nolan J. Sykes if you'd like. Big thanks to our producers this week, Thomas Ouellette and Gavin Kinzel. And thanks to our writer, Greg Nix. And thank you for listening.
And thank you for listening.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.